It was late afternoon before the group reached the Valley of the Seven Smokes. Preacher smelled the place before he could see it. The hot springs that dotted the valley gave off a fire and brimstone smell. Though these springs didn't actually form geysers, they gave off the same stench as their cousins to the north. The sun was almost down by the time they reached the Teton Sioux village. As usual, the gathering of teepees had been located on the bank of a stream that flowed fast and cold, fed not only by springs, but also by snow melt from the towering peaks that surrounded the valley. The sight of the curs made Preacher think about dog and about horse as well. He knew that by now, horse would have pulled free from the sapling where his reins had been tied. There was a good chance both animals had followed him from the spot where he had been captured. He believed that if he let out a shrill whistle, they would come a-running. He wouldn't do that, though, not as long as he was a prisoner. He didn't want his two best friends to fall into the hands of the Indians. The warriors who had been left behind by Badger to guard the village strode out, carrying bows and tomahawks. The chief dismounted. One of the warriors clasped wrists with Badger in greeting.
You had good hunting, bites like a badger.
Yes, it is the one called Preacher. Take them all over there.
The prisoners were shoved inside a conical hide dwelling, which was bare of furnishings. Not even a solitary buffalo robe lay on the ground. The only thing inside the teepee was a fire pit filled with cold ashes. The prisoners sat down awkwardly, since their hands were still tied behind them. With nine of them crammed into the teepee, quarters were pretty tight. Chester Sinclair wasn't ready to give up, though.
Turn around a little, Mr. Hodge. I'll see if I can reach your bonds and untie them. If just one of us can get loose, then he can free the others.
Well, I suppose it can't hurt to try.
Hodge scooted around until he and Sinclair were sitting almost back to back. Sinclair strained blindly with his hands.
I've got him. Now, let's see if I can untie them.
How's it coming along, Chester? Are you making any progress?
Not much. My fingers are so numb, I can't really feel what I'm doing. But I'll keep trying.
Night continued to settle down over the Valley of the Seven Smokes, and soon it was almost pitch black inside the teepee. The flap of the teepee was brushed open. Badger stood there with a torch in one hand. He waved the other hand at the prisoners.
Bring them!
Badger stepped back to let his warriors enter the teepee. One by one, Preacher and the other captives were dragged out and stood up.
They're going to kill us now. I just know it.
Maybe not.
Preacher sensed that something about the situation had changed. Badger didn't look nearly as happy as he should have if he was about to torture and murder some of the whites he hated so much. The prisoners were taken to a large open area in the center of the village. A thick post about 6 feet tall, made from the trunk of a young pine, stood in the center of the clearing, where it had been driven solidly into the ground. Broken branches were piled around the base of the pole, and Preacher knew why they were there. Injuns got a great deal of enjoyment out of tying a captive to a post like that, piling wood around his feet and setting it on fire.
Take that one!
Two warriors grabbed Rip Giddens' arms and manhandled him over to the post. Rip looked angry, but his rugged face didn't show any fear. His arms were first freed and then jerked cruelly behind his back and around the post, where his wrists were tied together again with rawhide thongs. Being bound like that forced him to stand up straight against the post.
Damn it, now Rip ain't done nothing to you. You know he's always been a friend of your people, just like me.
No white man is a friend to the human beings.
You know that ain't true.
What about all the warriors you have killed?
I never killed nobody who wasn't trying to kill me first or who didn't have it coming for some other reason.
What about walks with a limp, gray sky, and tall like a pine? You stole their lives from them last night.
They met their deaths in an honorable fight, as did one of our party, the brother of one of my friends. Both sides have suffered. This doesn't mean we cannot be friends again. Hairface was my friend, and so were the others who are still here. Now I wish no harm to your people, and neither to those who are with me. Release them and welcome us as guests, and let us have peace between us.
You talk of peace, Preacher. You who are known by some as the wolf who stalks in the night. The slayer of human beings. The enemy of our people.
I'm not your enemy.
Some among us say that as well. That is why it has been decided not to kill you first. That is why this man will die first. Unless you agree to what I propose.
What do you wish of me?
More than once you have dared me to fight you, Preacher. If you agree, you are about to receive what you desire. You and I will do battle to the death!
If I fight you, will you let the others go and cause them no harm?
You will fight me, and I make no promise about these others. But you will have a chance to do battle for your life.
No deal. I won't make a bargain like that.
You would rather stand by and watch your friends die screaming in the flames?
Don't listen to him, Preacher. I don't give two shits what he does to me. Make him promise to spare the others before you agree to anything.
You may as well kill me now while my hands are tied, bites like a badger. You've got no honor anyway.
For a white man to accuse one of the true people of having no honor is foolish. Everyone knows it is the white men who have no honor.
That's what you say. But your people here, and they know the truth.
All right. I agree. We will fight, and if you defeat me, you and these others will go free. They will come to no harm from the Teton Sioux.
Your word on that?
My word, Preacher.
All right, then. Cut me loose and let me get some feeling back in my hands.
Badger drew his knife, but paused before he slashed the bonds around Preacher's wrists.
There is one more condition.
What's that?
You must give me your word, but you will not speak as you did in the village of the Blackfoot. When it was thought that the Great Spirit had touched you.
You don't want me to go preaching, huh? All right, Badger. You got my word on that, too.
You have not asked what will happen to these others if you lose.
Oh, I don't intend to lose.
Huh. Just so you know, they will all follow you into death. But they will die quickly rather than slowly and painfully. This, I will do to honor a fallen enemy.
Badger turned to one of the other warriors and held out his hand. The man drew his knife and put the handle in Badger's palm. Badger threw the knife at the ground so that the blade buried itself in the earth next to Preacher's right foot.
Pick it up whenever you are ready to die, Preacher.
Be careful, Preacher. That Redskin's probably a tricky sumbitch.
Yeah, probably, Switchfoot.
Preacher bent his knees and reached down to grasp the handle of the knife. As he straightened, he pulled the blade from the dirt, wiped it on the leg of his buckskin trousers, and nodded to the chief.
All right, Badger, you've got it to do.
Preacher moved forward to meet the man.
I will enjoy peeling the hide off of you, one agonizing strip at a time.
You gonna fight or try to talk me to death?
Preacher dodged Badger's first thrust, but his shirt didn't. He launched an attack of his own, slashing at Badger and forcing the chief to step back. Badger's foot caught on a rock and he went down. Preacher dived after him, but Badger rolled desperately to the side. Preacher hit the ground. Badger kicked out his moccasin-shod foot crashing into Preacher's side. As Preacher surged to his feet, he saw that Badger was scrambling up too. Both men reached their feet at the same time. On and on, two men battle. First one gained a slight edge and then the other. As the long minutes wore on, both men began to bleed in several more places. None of the wounds were serious enough to stop the fight, though. It appeared that nothing would do that, short of death for one or both of the combatants. As Preacher lunged in, his foot came down on a small branch that had been kicked out from the pile around the base of the post where Rip was tied. At the same time, Badger swung his leg in a kick that caught Preacher on the wrist. The knife went spinning out of his hand. Badger threw himself on Preacher and the knife in his hand swept downward. Preacher writhed and flung a hand up just in time to catch hold of Badger's wrist and stop the killing stroke. He smashed his other hand against Badger's ear. Badger let up a little on the knife, and Preacher was able to twist the blade aside from his body. Preacher hauled hard on Badger's arm and threw him aside. Preacher rolled after Badger and wound up on the chief's back, an arm looped around his neck from behind. Preacher's other hand still had hold of Badger's knife wrist. Preacher increased the pressure on the arm around Badger's neck. Badger let go of the knife and tried to bring his hand around so that he could claw at Preacher. Preacher held firm. Now that he had Badger in this death grip, nothing was going to force him to let go. Nothing except himself. Abruptly, Preacher released his hold and stood up, stepping back so the Badger was left lying on the ground.
Oh my God, what is he doing? Why didn't he go ahead and kill the Indian?
Hang on. I reckon Preacher knows what he's doing.
Why do you not kill me? Why do you rob me of an honorable death?
Because there ain't anything honorable about any man dying when he don't have to. Now your chief has fought well. He's a fine enemy. But I would have him for a finer friend, as Hairface was my friend. These people and I mean you no harm. We come to the Valley of the Seven Smokes in peace. You free them, and songs will be sung of the generosity of the true people. Welcome them as guests, and they will leave as friends forever and ever.
Our fight was to be to the death. You would break your word?
Your life is mine. It's up to me what to do with it, and I'll return it to you. Perhaps I'll kill you another day, Bites Like a Badger, but I don't think this will ever happen.
No one may kill this man but me, and I cannot kill him now without dishonoring myself. So he and his friends are free, and may remain here with us as our guests for as long as they wish. So speaks Bites Like a Badger!
Luther Snell wiggled backwards in the tall grass, moving carefully so as not to disturb it any more than he had to. Baldy was beside him, also withdrawn slowly and cautiously from the reconnaissance of the Teton Sioux village. The two men had crept close enough to the village so that they had been able to witness the brutal combat between Preacher and Bites Like a Badger, and they had also heard what was said after that fight was over. When they were far enough away that it was safe for them to stand up, they did so and hurried back to where they had left the rest of the group.
Snell, did you and Baldy make the Indian village?
Yeah.
What'd you find out?
Oh, goddamn that preacher.
What'd he do?
He went out and made friends with those damn redskins. Even Badger.
You mean they ain't gonna kill him?
Nope, Vickery, they ain't. Him and Badger are almost blood brothers now. Even though I got the idea that Badger still don't like him very much.
Badger can't hate him any more than I do. But those pilgrims ain't prisoners no more. They're guests of the Tetons now. It's gonna be harder than ever to get our hands on them.
Oh, hell. Let's just give it up.
I'm not giving nothing up, Collins. We're still gonna be rich, and Preacher's still gonna die. Hell, it's better this way.
Well, how do you figure that?
Because this way, I still get to enjoy killing Preacher myself.
Now that Preacher and the others were guests of Badger's people rather than captives, everything was different. Within minutes of friendship being declared, all the bonds had been cut and the former prisoners were freed. They were ushered into one of the other lodges, but this time, several squaws escorted them there, instead of tomahawk-toting warriors. When they were left alone, Willard Carling rubbed his wrists where the tight rawhide thongs had chafed him.
I can't believe it. We're not going to die.
You saved us, Preacher. If you hadn't fought that savage and won, they would have killed all of us.
Well, maybe, Miss Faith. I'm the one Badger really had a grudge against. He might have been satisfied with killing me and maybe ripping Switchfoot and Hammerhead and Tom, but he might have let you folks live and made slaves out of you.
Slaves? How terrible! I didn't know Indians had slaves. I thought only illiterate Southerners kept other human beings in bondage.
The tribe's been making war and taking slaves from each other as long as anybody's lived on this continent.
But you can't approve of such things.
Well, knowing that something exists and approving of it are two different things.
Preacher lifted a hand to his side where Badger's knife had gashed him.
Feels like I'm still bleeding a little.
Let me take a look at it. Maybe I can help.
No, ma'am, that's all right. I'm betting that Rip or one of these other good old boys has experience at patching up knife wounds. And squaws are mighty good at fixing up poultices and things like that. No, I'll be fine, ma'am.
I insist. Take your shirt off.
faith was not going to be denied. So Preacher gave in and peeled his buckskin shirt over his head. It was an ugly gash about 4 inches long.
Oh, that really ought to have stitches.
Well, now, stitching up a wound out here is tricky business. Sometimes you wind up just making it worse. Best thing you can do for a scratch like this is put a poultice on it and then bind it up as tight as you can.
Where do I get this poultice?
Well, like I said, one of the squaws can gather some moss and herbs and make one up.
A few minutes later, the squaws returned with a large pot of stew. The former prisoners crowded around it. The savory aroma emanating from the pot made all of them realize just how long it had been since they had eaten.
Where are the bowls and spoons?
One of the squaws handed out wooden bowls.
No spoon. You just dip your bowl in the pot and then eat with your fingers.
How is one supposed to eat stew with one's fingers?
One picks out the pieces of meat and onion and Injun taters, and one drinks what's left.
Preacher showed the gash in his side to one of the squaws. She nodded, then left the lodge to make a poultice and tend to it. Everyone dug in, dipping their bowls in the stew pot. A short time later, the engine woman returned with the poultice, a mass of moss and mud and herbs.
Oh! Oh, my lord, that smells awful!
The squaw plastered it onto the wound, then wrapped strips of rawhide around Preacher's torso and tied him tightly in place.
See, doing it this way will leave less of a scar than if somebody tried to sew it up.
It takes an incredible amount of knowledge just to survive out here, doesn't it?
Yeah, but folks learn. Either that or they die.
When the meal was over and Preacher's wound had been tended to, the frontiersmen stretched out on the buffalo robes. Warm from the fire and with their bellies full again, they'd be asleep within minutes.
Just where am I supposed to sleep? There's no privacy.
Chester Sinclair picked up one of the robes and carried it over to the rear wall of the lodge, where he spread it out carefully.
You can sleep here, Miss Faith. No one will bother you.
That robe, it smells a bit, doesn't it?
You'll get used to it, and it's soft enough you won't really care anyway.
Oh, I suppose.
Faith went over to the robe. She lowered herself stiffly onto it and stretched out, turning her back to the others in the teepee. Faith was the first person to fall asleep, and everyone else followed shortly thereafter. Preacher was sore and stiff when he woke up the next morning, but that came as no surprise. Once he had stretched out a few of the kinks, he got up quietly and slipped out of the lodge without disturbing anyone. The Teton village was coming to life in the dawn. Women had gotten up and stirred the cooking fires until flames leaped up merrily. Dogs trotted here and there on the usual mysterious canine errands. And while most of the warriors were still asleep, a few of them were out and about, carrying weapons and alertly watching the countryside around the village. Preacher ambled over to one of the warriors, a middle-aged man he recognized from previous visits whose name was Panther Leaping.
Morning, Panther. May this day be a good one.
A good day to die.
If the spirits will it so. Why are you so watchful on such a fine morning?
Because the filthy dung-eating crow would like nothing better than to ruin it.
So there's trouble between the crow and the Teton Sioux? I've not heard about it.
There's always trouble between the dung-eaters and the real human beings. The crow have killed our warriors and stolen our women and horses.
This is sort of far south for them to be raiding, ain't it?
Tell that to Silver Bear. He is their chief now and seeks war not only against the Teton Sioux, but also the Ogallala and the Hunkpapa and the Minnekanju, as well as the Cheyenne and the Arapaho.
Damnation. Sounds to me like he don't get along with much of anybody.
That is why so many of the older warriors among the people do not want Bites Like a Badger to pursue war against the whites. We should be getting ready to fight the Crow instead. This fight is coming, whether we want it or not.
It will be a good fight, but the true people will defeat the dung eaters.
That is why we watch. Treacherous dogs that they are. The crow might attempt to strike us unaware, so we watch for them, night and day.
Preacher looked around to see Chester Sinclair emerge from the teepee. Spotting Preacher and Panther Leaping, he walked toward him.
Everything all right this morning, Preacher?
Well, fine enough. We're alive, ain't we?
Can't argue with that.
You look almost happy, Sinclair.
I am. I slept extraordinarily well. This hot country air, it's like nectar to a man's lungs. How's your wound?
Well, it's a mite stiff, but I'm fine. I slept pretty good, too. That and some victual sure as hell make a difference in the way a man feels.
Willard Carling crawled out of the lodge in time to hear Preacher's last comment.
Oh, amen to that. Preacher, I'd like to have my paints and my canvases back. Do you think the chief would send someone back to where they were left so they could be fetched here? I mean, if it's not too much trouble. Really, though, they had no right to discard our possessions like that.
Out here, a man's generally got whatever rights he makes for himself and what he can hold on to. But I reckon I can understand why you feel that way. You came to the frontier to paint, after all, and hell, you can't do that without paints and canvases.
Well, exactly! Thanks for your understanding, Preacher. Now, if you'll just tell, what's his name? Bites Like a Badger?
Yeah. Come on, we'll see if we can find him.
Preacher nodded farewell to Panther Leaping and led Carling toward Badger's Lodge, which was one of the largest in the village and was located near the center of the gathering.
Hello, Bites Like a Badger. It's Preacher. I would have words with you.
Badger must have been awake already, because the entrance flap on the teepee was thrust back only seconds after Preacher spoke.
Your Preacher is in pain this morning?
Well, no more than Bites Like a Badger.
Then you are in pain this morning. What is it you wish?
My friend would speak to you. Well, go on. And remember, begging's not the way to go about it. Just ask straight out.
All right. You and your warriors took my paints and canvases and brushes. I want them back. I need them to paint. I want you to send men to get them and bring them back to me.
Does this foolish little man not know I still hold his life in my hands?
Well, among his own people, he's sort of a great man, you know, a shaman.
Oh. Is he a Berdash in disguise?
Now, a Berdash was an Indian who took on the role of a squaw in the tribe, might even dress like one. In a lot of the tribes, they were considered holy men, or holy women, or holy something anyway.
Yeah, it could be from the way he acts. I'm not real sure about that part, but he demands the return of what is rightfully his, and if he is truly a guest in this village, you'll be a good chief and honor his demand.
I could strike him down right now.
Well, now you could kill him, but if you do, it'll be a defeat for you, because it'll be forever a stain on your honor. You have given your word that no harm will come to him and the others.
I will not harm him. And I will send a small party of warriors to bring his belongings, strange though they may be, to the village. But only if he pledges not to use them to harm any of my people.
He means no harm to your people, and he wishes them only well.
That is agreed. The little man possesses more courage than I thought to speak to me the way he did.
Well, thank you, Chief. You are a fine man. And I will paint your portrait first, before anyone else in your village.
Come on, let's go back to the lodge with the others. Even though the Tetons have promised us their hospitality, it wouldn't be a good idea to go wandering around too much, especially by your lonesome.
Oh, don't worry about that. I don't intend to stray far from your side, Preacher.
By the time Preacher and Carling got back to the lodge, the others were awake. Faith rushed up to her brother and threw her arms around him.
My God, Willard. Chester told me you went off to confront that awful Indian. Have you lost your mind? He could have killed you. And all over some stupid paints and canvases.
Stupid paints and canvases? I don't talk that way about your poetry, Faith.
Oh, you know I didn't mean anything by it. I just meant you shouldn't be risking your life like that.
I wasn't risking my life. I was simply letting the chief know that he had no right to throw away my property. And that I wanted it back. And he agreed with me, too.
He did.
Oh, yeah. You, by God, stood up for what was right, Mr. Carling.
Oh, please call me Willard. After all, we're fellow frontiersmen now, eh?
Yeah, you betcha, Willard.
Well, now that we're here, what are we going to do?
Well, Jasper, I'm going to wait until I get my paints and canvases back, and then I intend to spend at least a week painting.
I suppose I could try to compose some verses about the way these savages live. It's hardly a fit subject for something as beautiful as poetry, but an artist works with the materials at hand. What about you, Preacher?
I figured I'd rest up and let these scrapes and bruises I got heal. After that, I don't know. Snell's still out there somewhere, and he'll be a threat to you folks as long as him and his bunch are around. Besides, I got a score to settle with him too, so I may just go looking for him instead of waiting for him to come to me.
You mean you're going to try to kill him?
He's got it coming.
Perhaps, but no one declared you judge, jury, and executioner, Preacher.
The nearest judge and jury are back in St. Louis, Hodge. That's as far in this direction as the law's gotten. Out here, justice comes from the barrel of a gun.
Well, that's not justice. That's anarchy.
That's the frontier, and the sooner you learn that, the better.
I'm a civilized man. I'll never believe the same way you do, Preacher.
Well, I don't recollect saying that I cared one way or the other whether you believed like me.
During the afternoon, Rip Giddens sought out Preacher.
You trust old Badger, Preacher?
Not completely. He'll keep his word as long as we're here in the village, but that's all I'm sure of.
We can't stay here forever. Sooner or later, we'll have to leave.
Yeah, that may be what Badger's waiting for. He may be just biding his time now. Of course, the crows could change all that.
How do you figure?
Well, according to what Panther Leapin' told me, the crows been raiding down here lately. Panther figures it's only a matter of time until they launch a real attack on the Tetons.
Crows hate just about everybody. Just about everybody hates them. But they're dangerous, Preacher, no doubt about that.
If they go to war, then Badger will have his hands full with that. He likely won't have the time or inclination to bother with us no more.
Yeah. There's one mighty big problem with that, though.
Being in the middle of a war between two Indian tribes ain't exactly the safest spot in the world now, is it?
Like most of the men who came to the Rocky Mountains in search of beaver pelts, the red-bearded trapper called Wingate was happy being by himself. He could go for weeks, even months, without seeing any other white men. And he didn't particularly care whether or not he saw any red men either, just as long as the ones he did see weren't hostile. With his horse and a pack mule, he rode through the majestic scenery and was glad to be alive and free and out in the open where he could enjoy all the sights and sounds. He got a mite nervous, though, when he realized that somebody was following him. All morning, his instincts had been worrying him. So long about noontime, he found a place in some thick woods where he could leave his horse and mule, and then took his rifle, with which he was an excellent shot. He climbed to the top of a rocky spur and settled down behind some boulders to watch for whoever was dogging his trail. A large group of riders was coming toward him. The frontiersman's eyes narrowed in surprise as he saw the first of the riders come into view, moving at a deliberate pace around a large cluster of boulders. They were white men, wearing red and blue uniforms and black shakos. The man in the lead wore a saber belted around his waist and had a little fancier uniform than the others. Wingate supposed he was the officer in charge. Wingate frowned. He figured that the soldiers had a right to be there. I mean, after all, ever since the Louisiana Purchase, this territory had been part of the United States. But it was damned odd to see soldiers wandering around in the mountains, especially on their own. Were they lost? They acted like they knew where they were going. He waited until they were closer. Then, acting on an impulse, he stood up and held his rifle over his head.
Hey! Hey down there!
Instantly, the soldiers reined their horses to a halt, and several of them raised their rifles and pointed them at Wingate before the officer twisted around in the saddle.
Hold your fire and lower your weapons. Hello, my good man!
What are you fellas doing out here? You lost?
Could you come down here so we don't have to shout?
Stay there! I'll be along in a minute!
Wingate climbed down from the rocky prominence. He fetched his horse and mule and led him out of the trees toward the group of soldiers. As he came closer, Wingate saw that the officer was a young man in his 20s with a little mustache curled up on each end. He was probably fresh out of West Point on his first assignment, Wingate figured. He also figured his superiors probably hadn't been too goddamn smart sending him out into the wilderness like this.
Ah, howdy, Lieutenant.
The officer swung down from his military saddle and offered his hand.
I'm Lieutenant Royce Corrigan, sir. At your service.
Wingate's the name.
You're British?
Trappers out here come from all over.
I see. You wouldn't happen to be a guide, would you? I'm afraid we lost ours a few days ago. An unfortunate encounter with a, grizzly bear.
You mean a grizz got him? That ain't a good way to go, being mauled by one of them monsters. I reckon the grizz ate the poor bastard, too.
Well, no. We shot the creature, killed it, but not in time to save poor Stevens.
That wouldn't be Blacktooth Stevens you're talking about, would it?
Actually, yes. Did you know him?
Met him at rendezvous a few times. Damn. So Blacktooth's gone under, has he? Shame. Did you skin out that bear and save the meat and the hide?
No. Should we have?
You left the carcass to rot? Old Blacktooth would be upset with you for letting it go to waste that way.
Yes. Well, we didn't know any better. You didn't answer my question about whether or not you're a guide.
Like I said, I'm a trapper. But I reckon you fellas need some help getting to where you're going, so I could lend you a hand.
That would be splendid. I can pay you the money that I had paid to Mr. Stevens. We recovered it from his, body before we buried him.
That'll be fine. Where are you headed?
Well, actually, I'm not sure. You see, we're looking for a party of travelers who came out here recently. They were supposed to visit a trapper's rendezvous and then continue their expedition through the mountains.
You wouldn't be talking about a bunch of pilgrims from back east, would you? A little painter fella and his sister and a couple of other gents?
That's them. Mr. Willard Carling's party. Do you know where they are?
I could probably find them. I saw them at the rendezvous, and I know which general direction they were heading.
That's wonderful. You're a godsend, Mr. Wingate.
First time anybody ever told me that. It's important that you find these pilgrims, is it?
Important? I should say so. It's a matter of an absolute fortune.
The warriors Badger had sent to retrieve Willard Carling's belongings returned to the village that evening, bringing with them all the canvases, brushes, and pots of paint that hadn't been broken, along with one easel. Carling almost cried with relief when he saw him.
Oh, now I can get to work again. First thing in the morning, as soon as the light is good, I'll begin that portrait of the chief as I promised.
Now, getting him to stand still for you may not be easy.
Oh, I'm sure he'll cooperate. Who wouldn't want to have his portrait painted?
Well, now, I just can't imagine.
The night passed without incident. True to his word, first thing the next morning, Carling had Sinclair set up the easel and place a blank canvas on it.
I wish I hadn't lost some of my paints. I know I'll make do, but it's still annoying.
Willard suddenly smiled as an idea occurred to him. He turned to Preacher.
There are drawings on the outside of these hide dwellings.
They're called teepees or lodges.
Yes, that doesn't matter. I remember also that when those savages captured us, they had colorful streaks on their faces. These Indians have their own paint.
Well, yeah. They make different colors of paints, mostly from berries and such.
Could you get them to make some for me?
I might be able to do that.
Oh, excellent. Now, if you'll just fetch the chief and let him know that I'm ready for him to pose.
Okay, Willard.
Dealing with Willard Carlin was a little like trying to deal with a headstrong child. It was a hell of a lot easier to do what he wanted than to argue with him.
If you just fetch a chief.
Fetch a chief my ass.
Preacher went in search of Bites Like a Badger, and he found him talking to some of the other warriors. As it came up, Preacher overheard enough of the conversation to know that Badger was sending the men out to scout to make sure there was no Crow raiding party in the area. The warriors loped off on their errand, and Badger turned to Preacher, still wearing that neutral expression.
What do you want?
Carlin's ready to paint your portrait.
What is this portrait?
It's a picture of you. You stand still and he paints what you look like.
I paint myself. And when I do, it is for war.
No, that ain't what I meant. But look, come with me and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Reluctantly, Badger went with Preacher.
There you are. Thank you for agreeing to pose for me. Now, if you'll just stand right over there,
Carlin got Badger posed like he wanted him. Badger wore his buckskins and a headband this morning, but not the feathered headdress that was his by right as the chief of this band.
No, this just isn't right. It's like trying to paint a magnificent peacock without its plumage. Chief, you're going to have to get your headdress and put it on.
Does he wish to go to war with me?
No, it's all for show. Look, maybe you ought to get your tomahawk and your bow and a quiver of arrows while you're at it. I got a feeling he's going to ask for them next anyway.
I do not like this pretending to go to war. It feels wrong to me.
Yeah, well, he's your guest, though, so I reckon you got to oblige him.
Stupid white Berdash.
The chief stalked off.
Oh, dear, he's not deserting us, is he?
No. He'll be back. He's just getting his war bonnet and some other gear, so he'll look savage enough to suit you.
Oh, well, that's splendid.
Badger came back a short time later, suitably bedecked in war bonnet and a fancier set of buckskins, with a lot of beaded decorations that must have taken his wives hours and hours of tedious, painstaking labor. He had a fringed quiver full of arrows slung on his back, a tomahawk with a feather tied to its handle tucked behind his rawhide belt, and he had a sturdy bow gripped in his hand.
Oh, now that's how a noble savage is supposed to look!
Carling positioned the chief in an imposing stance and picked up his brush to begin to paint. Preacher wasn't sure, but he could have sworn that he saw the slightest look of enjoyment on Badger's face. Under Carling's skilled touch, the portrait of Bites Like a Badger that began to take shape really looked like the chief. It was amazingly lifelike, in fact, especially considering that Carling was nowhere near finished with it. The painting would still require a lot of details and fleshing out.
I cannot stand here all day.
Hey, Willard, let me talk to you a minute. Maybe you better stop for a while. You don't want him getting too impatient with you.
But I've barely started. Very well. Since the chief is being gracious enough to extend his hospitality to us, I suppose I should honor his wishes. Anyway, I can work on the background while he's doing whatever it is the chiefs do.
You can move now.
Oh, thanks to the Great Spirit for that.
What's he doing? He can't look at the painting yet. It's not finished.
I reckon you better let him be the judge of what's proper and what ain't.
Very well, but it will look a lot better when it's done.
Carling stepped back as Badger circled around to the front of the easel and stared at the portrait. Carling had roughed in his figure, and it looked remarkably like the chief. For several long moments, Badger didn't take his eyes off the painting. Then he turned toward Carling. He jerked the tomahawk from behind his belt and raised it over his head, ready to split the artist's head open.
Stop him! He's going to kill me!
Whoa, now, settle down. What's wrong?
Badger pointed at the painting.
He has stolen my soul!
Well, you knew he was painting your picture. Why are you upset now, Badger?
I did not know it would look like that! That's me! He has stolen my soul!
Well, what will it take to make this right, Badger? Now, Carlin knows little of your ways. He meant you no harm.
Badger slowly lowered the tomahawk, but he was still clearly furious.
He must put my soul back in my body.
Well, how does he go about that?
He must... I do not know! My soul is gone, and I do not know how to get it back!
Holy shit, Willard, paint over it.
What? But that would destroy it. All my work would have been for nothing.
That's better than having Badger think you stolen his soul. If he keeps working himself up into a state, he's going to forget that he promised you'd be safe here in the village.
Are you sure that's the only thing I can do?
I ain't sure of nothing after dealing with you two, but it's worth a goddamn try.
Carlin got to work. He took white paint and brushed it onto the canvas with swift, broad strokes, spreading it until the portrait of Badger could no longer be seen.
Now, Chief, right about now, you should be feeling your soul coming back into your body.
Yes. Yes, I feel it. It is good to have a soul again.
All right, it's done. It's all ruined.
And you're still alive. I thought Badger understood what was going on, but I reckon he didn't.
Can I paint any of them, or will they all react like that?
Look, maybe you better stick to landscapes for a while. Might be safer, huh?
Ah, very well. But perhaps you could talk to the Indians, Preacher, and find some of them who would be willing to pose for me, without threatening to kill me.
Oh, sure. I'd just be plumb honored to do that.
I know artists are supposed to suffer for their art, but getting threatened with a tomahawk, please.
Somewhat to Preacher's surprise, he actually did find several of the warriors who were willing to pose for Carling without fear of having their souls stolen. It made more sense when he realized that they were all older men who had been friends with Hairface. Everyone in the village knew that Badger had been terribly upset when he saw Carlin's portrait of him. Preacher supposed the warriors were trying to make a point by posing. It was a subtle dig at Badger that had the chief seething. Not surprisingly, after a few days, Badger came to Carling.
You will paint my picture!
What?
Carling closed his eyes and pressed the fingertips of one hand to his temple. He turned to Preacher.
This is something he really wants this time?
It appears so. In fact, I'd say he wanted tomahawk bad.
Very well, then. I'd be glad to paint your portrait again. Chief, just dress as you did the last time and come to see me whenever you're ready. I swear I could stay out here 100 years and never understand these people.
Is that right, huh? Well, that's sort of the way I feel about folks who live back east.
The gash in Preacher's side was healing just fine. The poultice had done its job. The bruises he had received in the fight with Badger were fading, and the soreness in his muscles had just about gone away. He started thinking again about how he was going to resolve his unfinished business with Luther Snell and the other men responsible for the death of Mountain Mist. Willard Carling seemed to be happy, humming to himself and talking as he painted all day. Jasper Hodge was also busy, making notes and writing. Faith had given up on composing any poetry, but seemed to be reasonably content watching her brother at his work. But it was Chester Sinclair who was enjoying the sojourn in the Teton Sioux village the most. He had made friends with Panther Leaping, and the two of them could be found deep in conversation. Chester's beard had grown more, and most of the time he wore a buckskin shirt that one of the squaws had given him. Preacher had noticed that squaw making eyes at Sinclair, but he seemed completely oblivious to her interest in him. He was still smitten with Faith Carling, and he was usually somewhere near her when he wasn't visiting with Panther. One day, Preacher found the two men throwing tomahawks at a stump. Panther was trying to show Sinclair how to use the weapon. Sinclair was pretty clumsy at first, missing the stump entirely with his throws, but he got the hang of it fairly quickly. When he threw the tomahawk and the head of it finally stuck in the stump, he grinned and looked around to see if anyone had witnessed the feat.
Did you see that?
Sure did. That's pretty good, Chester.
Oh, Panther Leaping is a good teacher.
Do you think Faith would like to see me throw the tomahawk?
I wouldn't know. You'll have to ask her.
Oh, I believe I will.
A sudden commotion drew Preacher's attention to the edge of the village. Realizing that there was some sort of trouble looming, Preacher ran towards the outskirts. He was quickly joined by Rip Giddens.
Something's up, Preacher, and I got a hunch it ain't good.
You and me both, Rip.
They came up to a gathering of warriors and saw that the men had formed a circle around the young brave. The young man had a bloody gash on his forehead. He had been in a fight, and then he had run a long way. The warriors parted as Badger came up. The chief confronted the young man.
Longgrass, where are the other scouts?
Dead. We encountered a Crow war party. My companions fought bravely, but there were too many of the dung eaters. They killed the others and almost killed me. I escaped to bring warning. Otherwise, I would have stayed and died with my Sioux brothers.
The dung eaters are coming here?
They were headed in this direction when we met them.
Where?
At the head of the Valley of Seven Smokes.
That wasn't good news. The head of the valley wasn't far away, and the war party wouldn't be far behind the wounded scout.
How many?
More than the five of us could have counted on all our hands and feet.
Lord,
That's more than 100 Injuns.
Yep, and they'll be painted for war.
Longgrass collapsed, and Preacher saw another terrible wound on the back of the young man's head that hadn't been visible to him until now. Preacher knew that the young warrior had just traveled over the divide. Badger knelt beside Longgrass for a moment, rested a hand on the young man's shoulder.
Songs will be sung about your bravery, Longgrass.
What do we do, Preacher?
Preacher and Rip hurried back to the lodge where the rest of the visitors were staying.
Reckon we ought to grab those pilgrims and light a shuck out of here?
Then we'd be on our own. And if the crow overrun the village, they might come on after us. We got a better chance of stopping them here.
You mean we're going to fight on the side of Badger and his people?
I don't see as we got much choice. Anyway, we're their guests. It's the honorable thing to do.
I never figured to die helping one bunch of Redskins fight off another bunch of Redskins.
Well, that's the thing about death. When it's ready to come calling, it don't much care what anybody's been figuring on.
The pilgrims took the news hard, especially Willard.
What? What? We're going to fight Indians?
Crows. Their normal hunting grounds are north and east of here, but from what I've heard, they've been raiding in this area for a while now. Badger's had scouts out watching for them, and a little while ago, the crows jumped one of the scouting parties and wiped him out, except for one warrior who made it back with a warning. Then he died, too.
That's awful.
But why do we have to fight? We don't have anything to do with hard feelings between the tribes.
You accepted Badger's hospitality.
After he terrorized us and tried to kill us.
That don't matter. These folks are our friends now, and we have to help them. Besides, I'd rather fight the crow with Badger and his warriors on our side than have to take him on later by ourselves.
That makes sense. Make our stand here while we still have allies.
Right.
Count me in. Just give me a gun and some ammunition. Panther gave me a tomahawk, too.
Chester, have you lost your mind? You're no Indian fighter. You're not a fighter of any kind.
You may be wrong about that, Faith.
Ma'am, you and Sparrow stay inside the lodge no matter what you hear going on out there. Come on, men. You too, Willard.
A few minutes later, Preacher and the Easterners gathered outside their lodge. Preacher looked toward the hills.
Here they come.
Crow warriors, their faces painted for war, ran out of the trees at the edge of the village and were among the lodges almost instantly, seething with their hatred for the Tetons. Preacher had his rifle in his hands, so he used it first, picking out a crow who was just now emerging from the trees. Preacher dropped the empty rifle at his feet and yanked his pistol from behind his belt. With his guns empty, Preacher took the time to jam the pistols behind his belt again, then drew his knife and the tomahawk with which he had also armed himself. Elsewhere in the fight, Chester Sinclair emptied his pistol as well. Sinclair leaped over the still twitching body and crashed the empty gun against the skull of another warrior. Nothing was going to galvanize Willard, Carling, and Jasper Hodge. Both men were terrified to the point of being panic-stricken. One of the marauders ran straight at Carling. Carling jerked up the pistol in his hand, turned his head, closed his eyes, and pulled the trigger. But nothing happened. He had forgotten to ear back the gun's hammer and cock it. Carlin didn't open his eyes until Hodge grabbed his shoulder and shook him.
Willard, I shot him. I actually shot that Indian.
Carlin looked around and saw the crow writhing on the ground as blood welled from the wound in his chest. Hodge stood next to the artist, a grin on his face.
You forgot to cock your gun.
What? Like this?
Carlin glanced up and saw one of the raiders holding a bow with an arrow knocked and drawn back, ready to fire. The arrow was aimed right at the unsuspecting Hodge's back. Carlin shoved the journalist aside. Carlin took out the engine with one shot. Both men had managed to kill one of the enemy and saved each other's lives in the process. But now their guns were empty, and it was taking several minutes to reload.
Let's get out of here!
The bodies were piled up around Preacher's feet, and both of his hands were coated with the enemy's blood. His arms were splattered with gore up to the elbow. Not far behind him, Tom Ballinger fought well, too, until one of the raiders ran a lance through his right thigh from behind. The crow paused to try to yank the lance free, and that was his undoing. Tom twisted as he fell and swiped his knife across the engine's throat. Tom sprawled on the ground with the lance still lodged in his flesh and began trying to crawl back into the battle. Switchfoot and Hammerhead Jones fought back to back, each protecting the other, until an arrow skewered Switchfoot in the chest. Realizing that Switchfoot had been hit, Hammerhead swung around and grabbed his friend before Switchfoot could fall.
Let me go. I'm done for, Hammerhead.
The hell you are! We'll get you somewhere so you can sit down, and we'll get that arrow out.
A Crow war axe crashed down on Hammerhead's skull. Even as the world was going black around him, he retained the strength to swing around and smash his tomahawk into the face of the raider who had struck him. Hammerhead toppled to the ground next to the body of Switchfoot. The two friends died side by side.
Rip! Fall back! Fall back!
Rip Giddens did as Preacher said, continuing to fight as he retreated slowly toward the center of the village. Preacher did likewise. He glanced around for the others. Tom Ballinger had somehow gotten back to his feet, but he was severely hampered by the now broken lance that impaled his thigh.
Sinclair, help Ballinger!
Sinclair just banged the heads of two of the engines together, knocking them out. For a second, it seemed the Preacher's shouted command failed to penetrate his battle-fogged brain. But then he gave a little shake of his head and turned to grasp Tom Ballinger's arm. He half-dragged, half-carried the wounded man as they followed Preacher and Rip. Carlin and Hodge had made it almost all the way back to the lodge where Faith and Sparrow were hiding.
Why don't you reload?
Hodge pushed a pistol into Carling's hands on the run.
Why don't you reload? You know as much about it as I do.
As Carlin trotted along, he fumbled with the powder horn and the shot pouch Preacher had given.
I'm not cut out for this. I'm an artist, not a woodsman.
Well, I'm a writer. Do you think I know how to do anything useful?
Here, you hold the gun and I'll pour some more powder in it.
Working together as they hurried along, they managed to get the pistol reloaded. Unfortunately, none of them realized that Carling had dumped at least twice as much powder down the barrel as was needed. They rammed home two balls, double-shotting the gun as they'd seen Preacher do with his pistols.
There! Isn't that our lodge?
I think so, but I'm not sure. All these teepees look alike to me.
I'm sure it is. I recognize the drawings on it. Let's see if Faith and Sparrow are still all right.
Willard jerked the entrance flap aside and started into the lodge, only to be confronted by Sparrow.
Sparrow, no!
Carlin threw himself backward to avoid the attack, but he stumbled and tripped. He fell to the ground, striking his head hard enough that he was knocked out cold.
Sparrow, wait! It's us!
The engine woman stopped, realizing what she had done, and she whirled around to retreat back into the lodge. Hodge thought for a second that she was running away from him. Then he glanced over his shoulder and saw a half a dozen of the painted savages charging at him. He had the pistol in his hand, so he jerked it up and pulled the trigger. Blast wrenched the gun right out of Hodge's hands and threw him backward, singeing his eyebrows and blistering his face. The two balls loaded in the gun were propelled out with such force that they smashed completely through the body of one Crow warrior and buried themselves into the belly of another one. Both raiders died almost instantly. Hodge lay stunned on the ground, not far from the unconscious form of Willard Carling. Faith had thrown herself face down in one of the buffalo robes and burrowed into it as if she could somehow hide there. A tense-faced Sparrow knelt beside her, her knife raised to strike. Sparrow's gaze was fixed on the entrance to the lodge. The hide flap was suddenly wrenched aside, and savage painted faces leered in at her. She started to bring the knife down toward Faith's back. Sparrow intended to drive the blade into Faith's heart and then use it to cut her own throat before the crows could reach her. But she didn't get the chance. One of the raiders had already spotted the white woman on the ground, and his arms flashed back and then forward as he threw his tomahawk. The raiders charged into the lodge. They bent and grabbed Faith, jerking her to her feet. The savages dragged her out of the lodge. Still practically carrying Tom Ballinger, Sinclair hurried to catch up to Rip Giddens and thrust the wounded man into Rip's arms.
Here! I've got to get to Faith!
Preacher might have followed Sinclair, but at that moment, several Crow warriors came at him from the side. Since Rip was burdened with Ballinger, Preacher had to deal with the threat by himself. Some of the lodges were on fire now. The blaze was started by the raiders. Sinclair dashed through the coil and smoke and got confused for a moment, unsure where he was. But then he oriented himself and hurried on toward the lodge where he would find Faith and defend her to his dying breath if need be. Problem was, when he got there, she was being dragged out of the lodge by several Crows. She was already their prisoner.
No! Let go of her, you bastards!
Chester planted the tomahawk so viciously in the brave's head that it stuck there. When he tried to wrench it free, he lost precious seconds. In that time, several more engines closed in around them. One of them swung a war axe against his head, luck making the flat of it strike Sinclair's skull instead of the edge.
This white man is mine!
Carrying the blood-smeared knife and tomahawk, Preacher raced up to the lodge where he had left Faith and Sparrow. He spotted Willard Carling and Jasper Hodge lying on the ground and thought at first that the two Easterners were dead, but then he saw that they were beginning to stir as consciousness returned to him. Preacher stopped and knelt beside him momentarily, searching for wounds. Hodge's face looked almost sunburned. Preacher couldn't figure that one out, but it seemed to be the only real injury between the two men. He left him lying there and stepped over to the teepee, thrusting the entrance flap aside. His rugged features hardened even more when he saw Sparrow lying there in a pool of blood, an ugly wound in her chest. There was no sign of Faith Carling. As Preacher let the flap fall closed and stepped back, Rip and Ballinger came up, moving awkwardly because Rip still had to support most of the other man's weight.
Where's Miss Carling? Inside the lodge?
She ain't here, but Sparrow's in there. Dead.
Damn!
Let's see if those two know what happened.
Preacher went over to Carling and Hodge, who were slowly sitting up.
Willard, did you see your sister?
What? What did you say, Preacher?
Your sister. Did you see her when you and Hodge got back here?
No. I started inside, and Sparrow, of all people, tried to stab me. And then I seem to remember falling. I believe I hit my head. Yes, I definitely hit my head. I must have knocked myself out when I fell.
I saw Willard fall, and then some of the savages came at me. I still had a pistol, so I fired at them. I think it blew up. Anyway, that's the last thing I remember.
You asked about Faith. Where is she, Preacher? What happened to her?
I don't know. It looks like the Crows may have carried her off.
Oh, my God! You mean she's a prisoner again?
I don't see Chester around here either. You think the Crows got him too, Preacher? I know he was headed this way.
The same thought had occurred to Preacher. Sinclair would have attacked against even overwhelming odds if he was fighting to save Faith. If he had been killed, his body would still be here. So that left only one reasonable explanation. For some reason, the Crows had taken Sinclair prisoner instead of killing him. Now, once more, Sinclair and Faith were captives in the hands of savages in a savage land.